This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora e te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. This is a show that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. I thank you for joining us from around the motu and world this evening. Joining Sue and myself in the studio, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to our guest, Mark.
Thanks, dear. Thanks, Mike.
Hello, hello. Hey, thanks for taking the time with both of us tonight. How's things in your world, Mark?
Yeah, all good. I've just been travelling in the car, so I've come from one little box to another. It's all good.
From the inner studio, the studio of the car to the studio of the radio station. Anyway, I'm rambling. Hello, Sue. How are you going?
I'm pretty good tonight, I have to say.
Excellent.
Great to have you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sue.
It's cool to be here.
Cheers. Great.
Good stuff. Okay, well, let's get started with the show. Alcoholics Anonymous is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We do the work through a 12-step program where recovering alcoholics support each other who want to stop drinking and where we learn how to live life.
We do the mahi together and work through the 12 steps. In the rooms of AA, by sharing and listening, the main theme is that each one of us finally recognise that we are no longer able to handle alcohol in any form and that we need to stay away from it completely. The most important thing is that we also realise that we don't try to deal with the problem single-handedly. We bring the problem out into the open with other people in recovery.
For me, working through the AA program as a daily practice and being invested in recovery is about bringing a new version of life which is manageable and meaningful. And people come into the rooms with a range of thoughts and concerns about their life problems with alcohol and what the 12-step community is about.
Yeah, and so generally there's always a couple of reasons, right, why people come into the rooms thinking about coming into the AA rooms.
There's usually something going on.
And we've got a couple of, each AA live session, we always sort of rattle off a couple. So here's three of them, and one of them is I've tried to quit drinking on my own multiple times, but just keep relapsing. Does residential treatment really work? And how do I know if I need it? That's sort of good, yay. Another one is, or I'm worried about the cost of treatment, going into like a rehab facility. Are there options available through public health services? And another goodie is, I've heard about different recovery meetings and groups. How do I find the right fit for me?
Awesome.
Yeah.
And they'll be all quite relevant, I think, to Mark's story today. Even though each one of us has different reasons, there is one common bond, and that's that we all have a problem with drinking, whether that's by how much we drink in terms of volume and frequency, how our dependency on alcohol has become problematic, and how people close to us are concerned and impacted by our behaviours.
That's a big one. And every session, we always start with our wonderful AA preamble. So this is the statement that always happens as the meeting is started each day, evening, lunchtime, online, whatever you want to say. Mark, would you like to have a go at that one?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, sir.
Cool.
The AA preamble reads as, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other and that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Awesome. So just to let you all know that what you hear tonight are our own opinions. So these are the opinions of the three of us in tonight's show and not the opinions of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, necessarily. So we have guests who are invited to share their story and experience. However, as a whole, it's just the three of us as recovering alcoholics talking about different aspects of our recovery.
And then the next phase. This is so great. I love Mike's in charge tonight, and he's really structured us. So I'm quite enjoying it. I've even got what I meant to say and highlighted. That's excellent. We're in full professional production here. It's great. Okay, so each Tuesday night, it's Tuesday the 16th of September, and we always read the page, if you like, out of the Daily Reflection book. And tonight it's titled We Stand or Fall Together, and it starts like this. No society of men and women ever had a more urgent need for continuous effectiveness and permanent unity. We alcoholics see that we must work together and hang together, else most of us will finally die alone. And that's from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 561. And it continues. Just as the 12 steps of AA are written in a specific sequence for a reason, so it is with the 12 traditions. The first step and the first tradition attempt to instill in me enough humility to allow me a chance at survival. Together they are the basic foundation upon which the steps and traditions that follow are built. It is a process of ego deflation which allows me to grow as an individual through the steps and as a contributing member of a group through the traditions. Full acceptance of the first tradition allows me to set aside personal ambitions, fears, and anger when they are in conflict with the common good, thus permitting me to work with others for our mutual survival. Without tradition one, I stand little chance of maintaining the unity required to work with others effectively, and I also stand to lose the remaining traditions, the fellowship, and my life.
It's quite a heavy hitter today.
That was a really big one.
It's a big one.
And so tradition one is all about unity, right? If I remember correctly.
Is one of the key words in there, yep.
What do we think? For me, I guess I think that, yeah, in terms of working together, like I try, you know, what got me to my rock bottom was me doing everything my own way and just exercising my own self-will and doing what I wanted to do. And that didn't work out very well for me. So I guess, you know, for me, I've needed the help of other people. So reaching out to, you know, reaching out for help was sort of my first step in recovering. And, you know, like I think there's something really great about having a group of people that we all meet and get together and share our experience. And, you know, we all have our good days and bad days, and it's good to be a team.
Yeah, it's that sort of daily maintenance in a sense, eh? And also, I love that word up there at the beginning with hang together. And my experience is that as I've peppered myself along, you know, in the last couple of years that, yeah, I've made some really great connections and different events happen and, you know, you start sort of to broaden, in sobriety, I'm trying to find the right words here, but it's just like, yeah, you make connections with people you would never normally meet. You start to really get invested in who they are and sort of what they're telling you, you know, and what they're not telling you, you know, the sort of thing. And by going to different types of meetings, you know, got different vibes. I was at a Portobello meeting the other day. That's just quite a different relationship to some other meetings, you know, and it's like quite a different type of sharing space as well.
Yep.
And it's really effective. I love that difference, you know.
It's definitely one of the things I've noticed. There's a common goal in all the places that you go, and there's a common thread and theme that goes around, and people's experiences may vary, but because we're aware for the same cause, it's kind of strength in numbers. And so that word unity couldn't be a better one, I guess.
We often talk about placing principles before personalities and things
that's
as well.
That's so true, yeah, that's true.
Cool. So Mark's selected a few songs for us to play in the show this evening. And do you want to tell us about this first song you've picked for us, Mark?
Yeah, I picked a few songs. This is probably one of the hardest parts of the maybe doing the show, I guess. But Mr. Bojangles, song by Nina Simone. I think it was done by somebody else before that as well. It's like an old school song. It takes me back to probably a time when I wasn't an addict. I was just kind of living life. It's got a kind of a wee sad wee story. Just kind of it taps into my kind of old school vibe, I guess.
Okay, awesome. So Mr. Bojangles by Nina Simone.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you. Worn out shoes, with silver hair, a ragged shirt and baggy pants. The old soft shoe. Jumped so high, jumped so high. Then he lightly touched down. I met him in a cell in New Orleans. I was down. Looked at me to be the eyes of age as he spoke right out. He talked of life, talked of life. He laughed and slapped his leg a step. Said his name, Bojangles, then he danced a lick across the sand. He grabbed his pants, a better stance. Oh, how he jumped up high. He clicked his heels. He let go alive. Let go alive. He stood up and shook back his clothes all around. He danced for those at minstrel shows and county fairs throughout the South. He spoke with the tears of 15 how his dog and he traveled about. His dog up and died. He just up and died. After 20 years he still grieved. Mr. Bojangles, Mr. Bojangles, and he said, I dance now at every chance and honky tonks for drink. And tips. But most of the time I spend behind these county bars, he said, I drink some beer. He shook his head and as he shook his head. I heard someone respectfully ask, please, Mr. Bojangles, Mr. Bojangles, Mr. Bojangles.
Good track, good selection there.
Bit old school, but it's quite cute, that song, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I thought, Mark, that we when we have guests in, it's always really lovely to start off just getting to know you a bit and understanding, how you, I guess we were just talking off here that you've just reached 6 months in sustained recovery, which is cool, amazing. And tell us a bit more about that and, you know, your experience of coming into the rooms and that type of thing.
Yeah, I'd had a bit of practice in the past, in previous times of trying to give up drinking and things like that. So it was familiar in that regard, but I guess through going through the Bridge program and going to meetings kind of every day, pretty much, I started to get a real handle of the culture and the principles and things like that a lot more. So it's been a fantastic kind of journey. When I kind of hear, like, when I think of myself 6 months, I know it feels like a long time to me and it's a slog, but then listening to other people's stories and the length of time that they've had and things like that as well, it's kind of a real encouragement that there's so much more to learn and to grow in. So.
Amazing.
Cool. It's a real achievement, the way that's first 6 months, the early days, I think, are the hardest days.
Yeah, my new tag and everything like
that.
Oh, you get the models. And the Bridge program here in Otipoti, Dunedin?
That's correct. No, I was really lucky. I'd previously tried detoxes in Christchurch. Thorpe House was the place there. It was really good to get clean. But they only go for about a week, and a lot of people did go to like Bridge programs in Christchurch afterwards. I don't know why I never thought about doing that, but you know, I thought, you know, if I just get clean, I'll be all right. The first time I did the detox, I think I was sober for about 3 months. I got my 3 month chip at AA, and then I think either I just loosened up or I can't really remember. It might have been a stressor or something like that, and I made that excuse to drink, and then I continued. Then I did it again the following year, and I was clean for the week, and then I think it was about 2 weeks later, I think I, you know, failed again, I guess, or fell over again.
Because we're human, right?
That's it. It's
you know, kind of, like we give it a really good push in terms of that, and that sometimes it takes a while to land or
completely.
Maybe, you know, tell us about that, like in terms of.
See, I wish I could understand what my decision making was at those times when I chose to drink again. Maybe I thought it was going to be different this time, and I'd be able to stop because I've been to detox or something like that. Or maybe I was not aware of how much I was an addict and an alcoholic and things like that. I might not have done that as, like, accepted that yet properly. But I definitely knew when I was ready to be committed this time. So, start of this year, went to my doctor, end of last year, start of this year, went to my doctor and talked to him and admitted that I had a problem. I had been lying and, you know.
As we do.
Yeah. Been lying to family, friends, to everybody, sneaking, drinks, in the mornings, all through the day, all that kind of stuff. And I guess the lie was revealed and then I had to admit it. And a lot of people could see it and they asked, or they told me to get help. people had threatened me, like, as in, like, you won't be able to, I wouldn't be able to see my kids and stuff like that. You can't hang out with them, you know. So trust was starting to be broken in terms of my behaviours, or just being a bit more random, I guess, less trustworthy. So those kind of things took place beforehand. And then when I made that decision, well, I need to do something about it, it was the doctor, and the doctor sent me to alcohol and drug counsellor, and then they started giving me options of kind of things I could do.
Yeah, there's something, it's not, it's almost like that early part of surrendering, hey?
Yes.
Like when you go and I had a similar pathway in terms of telling my doctor, like, hey, I need help, you know? And then what can, and then it's, yeah, as soon as you tell someone, whether it's in your doctor or a really close friend or you go into your first meeting, there is a sense of, oh, okay, we're now on. But that sense of relief in a way, occasionally?
Kind of,
well.
Yeah, definitely.
Or
was
fear,
relief.
Maybe?
I was getting towards that point, I think, because I still kind of lied to my drug and alcohol person and, you know, I didn't really admit the full extent of my addiction. I admitted I had one and a problem and I need to do something about it, but I didn't really, I wasn't talking as honestly as what I could have. It took me probably getting into the Bridge program and starting to work the steps and starting to just see a bit straighter and shedding some skins, I guess. Mm. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the Bridge program, so if there's some listeners out there that might be thinking about trying to get some help and get into treatment and that kind of thing? Do you want to let us know a little bit about the program?
Yeah, so it's run through the Salvation Army. Like, I wasn't really too familiar with what it was. I only looked it up after it was recommended to me by the alcohol and drug lady. She said, there's one in Dunedin, there's one in Christchurch. I said, Dunedin. I'd been here last year as well. Dunedin's really familiar to me. And then it took a wee while to get in, like for a date to open up and things like that. So there's a bit of waiting. I tried to get sober and clean during that time, but that was a bit of a struggle. So I guess I kind of got up to that, keep just trying to maintain as much as I could until I got in there. Then you turn up about 10 o'clock. They've got like a residential house in town, shed house. Usually there's about 10 other clients or service users in there. You just essentially kind of like live together for 9 to 10 weeks. You work a program during the day. The Salvation Army's is the provider for the Bridge program. And you run a program that looks at the steps, what is addiction, cognitive behaviour therapy, looking at how to change your
CBT,
actions.
A
bit of CBT,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, and you just kind of, it's a bit of time to become more open. It's a really safe space to be able to become clean and sober, to pluck up the courage to attend meetings, to...
There's a routine, I guess, which initially could be a little bit daunting. Is it helpful in a way? You know, meals this time?
I
know it's not like a boot camp at all. I'm not, of course it's not.
Yeah.
But it's but there's that wraparound support, right?
Completely.
Like nutrition, food, care.
Yeah, you've got people there at all times. Kind of looking out for you, your best interest. There's the caseworkers when you're in, I called it going to school for the day kind of thing. You go to school for the day. And, so there's always some, like your days are pretty well planned. So routine is definitely there. And I think, I'm not too sure if it's a lot of people, but I definitely lost routine through addiction. I'd always lived through routine in my career and things like that and teaching and, I guess routine was one of the first things to go, you know, stay up
no
late.
No rules.
Yeah, go sleep in, that kind of thing. Yeah. So it was nice to get a sense of routine back in again.
And I guess there's no doubt it's a bit like the reading the earlier, like hang together. So you would get, you'd start to have good dynamics, maybe some unusual dynamics in the group as well. But for everyone out there, what happens in the AA meetings often... The Bridge program come to the different meetings, whether it's AA meeting or NA meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great way to get to
And that's how we get to meet you.
Get to meet people. Yeah. Yep. It's a great way to place to find sponsors and things like that, or people to be able to show you the ropes and that have possibly had more experience and or have had more experience in the rooms and in addiction and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's cool. And there's a bit of volleyball goes on as well.
Yep. Tuesday's the volleyball day. There's another group that runs through that day for people who have often gone to the Bridge program, Recovery Support Group.
RSG.
I get all my acronyms.
Are you an RSG?
Well, I'm an RSG.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
What does that involve? What sort of?
It's a meeting at the so it's a Tuesday morning meeting. It's quite a big meeting.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to like a meeting, like an AA meeting, but there's crosstalk. So you'll share on the usually the NA daily reading, but it's similar to the AA daily reflection. And so you share, and then but there's feedback and stuff from people afterwards. So as you know, in AA meetings, we don't have crosstalk, and you can't give feedback on people's shares. But
it's a really good place to be able to check in, like if you've done the program, or even if you haven't done the program, but you need that support. Yeah. So those Tuesdays are great. And then there's a volleyball game in the afternoon where the Bridgies. I'll call them Bridgies.
We call them the Bridgies. Yeah.
Where the Bridgies participate together with the RSG people, so it's again another way of supporting mutual support.
Gets a wee bit competitive at times.
Yeah, I've seen you out there, Mike.
There's quite differing abilities though, so you can't really get too carried away. There's a range of ages and physiques on the volleyball court.
Yeah. So, spiking is near on outlawed.
Yeah, no. No aggressive spiking.
And so when you, there's graduation, eh? Which is cool. I've been to a graduation, and you come out, and then again, you know, you back out into the big world.
It was really cool.
What was that like for you?
Like going through the program, I guess I can see kind of eras of myself within the program. Like the first kind of 2 weeks, I guess I was like coming down with withdrawals and things like that. And then just getting used to your body clean and that kind of stuff, that was really interesting. So time went quite slow then, and it was just getting used to patterns. And then I sort of felt more awake the cleaner I got, like more aware of your feelings and things like that. And then I guess you hit a kind of a normality patch where it's like, oh, I think I'm ready, you know, now. I could be ready now. But you're obviously not really as such. So it's a really good time to start working on your action plan for when you do depart and things like that. So working on a wellness recovery plan was really important.
It's another one of the acronyms.
Yeah.
A RAP plan,
yeah. I actually thought it was like I had to do some kind of rap at the start. It was like listening to this foreign language. I was busy preparing my lines.
I have heard a rap in a meeting before.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a goodie. It wasn't me.
Or me.
And then getting closer to the time, I can remember feeling quite nervous and kind of going, oh, this like stuff is getting real kind of thing, you know, now. And like, so I ended up staying a week longer. There's a couple of things that I just wanted to kind of tick off and have ready and really be clear on what I was going to do when I got out and things like that. And then it was graduation. You invite people to graduation. I had a lot of people from the rooms, from NA rooms and things like that.
And your beautiful family.
And my beautiful family.
Yeah. That was pretty special.
Yeah, I had my three kids there and my bonus daughter, their stepsister. So we all do things together pretty much. And so they were all there. So it was nice to see there, for them to be able to see the outcome, I guess. And it's kind of like people say all these good things about you. And so it's kind of like a bit of a booster while you leave. That same weekend, it was my daughter's graduation from university. So kind of like, you know, I don't know, it's high power moments, just this kind of events all took place at the same time. So
now where can you go along sober?
And I stayed in at the Bridge for that weekend. Okay. for that thing, because I went out to dinner and stuff with them and they were all drinking and things like that. And so it was my first time out and first time around alcohol, and so it was cool to have family support there. And at the same time. So yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Yes, it's quite cool, the sort of higher power synchronicities and things of the program. So like Mark and I, just, you know, for the record, are quite good friends and actually flat together. But yeah, that we've. Do you mind us talking about?
No,
that?
Go for
we've
it. Mate.
It's quite awesome. An interesting really connection that just popped up in the room. So, I'd known Mark, gotten to know Mark through when his time in the bridge, and we'd got on really well and played volleyball together. But I only knew him by his first name because we just introduced ourselves by our first names in the rooms.
Yeah.
And then he went to put his name in my phone, and I recognised his surname, and I said, "Oh, are you related to so and so?"
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, that's my father." And so it turns out that, yeah, in the 1960s, Mark's dad came out from Uganda on a scholarship and ended up living with my dad and my grandparents in Balclutha. So,
of all places.
Yeah. So yeah. That's just one of the weird synchronicities, eh? That,
yeah.
That sort of felt like it was meant to be, really.
There's been a lot of those occasions. And sometimes I kind of go, like, is that just because I'm more aware at the moment of things? Or... But at the same time, I guess the more people you meet and the rooms, AA, NA, and things like that are just really good ways to make those connections. And so, it's just cool having connections, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. What surprised you most about life and recovery so far?
Good question, yeah. Mike. That's a nice question.
Well, there's a lot of things that has surprised me. I guess... Every day is a learning opportunity. I think I've always had that as a thought, but I guess I'm more aware of my thoughts and feelings now, and that I am really responsible for moderating them through behaviours that aren't addictive behaviours.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the constant reminders that recovery gives me. It's kind of become a way of thinking and a way of life. I'll have to come back to that because I guess through the other parts of the conversation,
it's a complex, it's a little complex question to put you on the spot, eh?
Yeah,
there's a
lot of things that surprise me at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes this is the real small things, like I was driving in the car with my daughter on the way back from Wanaka,
yeah,
and it's some of the small conversations that we have that, you know, just seem clearer and more honest to me. In sobriety than they do, than they might have had in through addiction. So that always surprises me. It's like, oh, have we talked? I don't think we've ever talked about this thing before. So it's those kind of little points as well.
It's almost like you're more present.
More present, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
That's cool. And so if anyone's wondering about the Bridge Program and thinking that sounds interesting, I believe it's like really affordable and stuff as well, eh? Like there's not a significant financial cost.
No, essentially they try to make it a bit even for everybody, quite equal for everyone. So if you're on a benefit or anything like that at that time, they tend to take about 80% of your benefit away and keep a little bit there for spending money. But things like, and then if you're wanting to pay for it yourself, they try to make it about the same amount as what the person on the benefit might be paying.
Yeah.
So there's either it comes out of your benefit, or you can pay kind of weekly and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's probably around about $400 or something like that a week. It might end up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. But other people in the program will be able to.
Yeah. Sure.
Fill you in a little bit.
And
more.
I think I know from people that are. So some people get worried about, say, if they're in a rental, and they're going in to the program, like, will they have to keep paying their rent and stuff? But I believe that their benefit keeps paying their rent. You know, at their pad. Because obviously you don't want to kick them out
double
of rehab for them to be homeless all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So I think that all of that gets covered as well. So if you say we're on a benefit, your rent gets covered while you're in there and all your food and stuff's provided, eh? So
yeah.
I think you're not going to end up in a worse financial situation than when you went in.
For sure.
And also just for everyone else out there, in terms of recovery at the Bridge, is it the combination of different... Is it alcohol? Oh, it's an issue. There's abuse of alcohol. What is it?
Alcohol
encompass?
And drugs. And I mean, technically, you could probably be involved if you're a gambler or something like that as well. It essentially covers addiction. Yeah. So most people were either alcohol or drugs of some, or drugs of some kind.
Yeah. So it was a real common one, more than, say, is it alcohol? Like, there's a ratio, a perfect ratio, but...
It's interesting, like, different groups tend to have different things.
Different needs and different...
I've definitely seen... There's a lot of people that are, I guess, dual addicts that might go along with alcohol and a drug of their choice. So it tends to be a bit of a mixture. It's often, I always come to think, like, addiction does not discriminate in terms of what it is.
Oh, no, you're right there.
Yeah, so you get varying types of people, varying backgrounds of people. It's kind of like a, what would you say, licorice all sorts kind of thing. Yeah, you get a cross-section of New Zealand society, I would say.
I bet, yeah.
Hey, might be a good time to have a wee music break. So you've got another song for us lined up, Mark, I believe.
Cool, yeah. I think this is one song that I chose for my... we had to do in the bridge, like, what's your recovery song was one of the questions. Mm. Again, I was like, oh, too many songs. So this is by Narco Bear called Love Letters to God. It just reminds me of probably words like courage, showing strength, sending it, you know, sending out love and goodness and things like that. Yeah, if you have a listen, you'll get an idea.
Okay, awesome.
Give, always give what you can, even if your eyelids draw lines in the sand, and dig. Always dig a little deeper. Sometimes it's hard to be my brother's keeper. Love, so you let love in. Baby, I am home in the wake of your skin. And it's crazy how we wear our ceremony. Always be open to your path and your journey. Yes, she cradles my loneliness. A home in a forest nest. Universal test. Feel the weight of my love. Put your hand on my chest and rest. In the cradle of my arms, the battle that we face is a place where our scars come from. And to pick up the gun, my love, we are destined to teach these ones to be brave and never run away. Courage is birthed from the womb on the first light of day. Yeah, the day you were born, you came out perfect, never meant to be torn in silence. Never been so loud in the violence, never been so proud of our people. When we're fighting for a change, not afraid to lose it all. Fight all the rage, we are animals, and we cannot be caged. Provoke us to fight, so we burn a little sage and write poetry. Wiser than the enemy will ever be. The minority and authority, are you here to protect or arrest me? I can't tolerate the hate and I'm losing sleep. Can't breathe cause they're choking out a war in me. Immorality, yeah.
Love letters to God. I wonder if she reads them, or if they get lost in the stars, stars, and stars. Yeah. So many parts to a heavy heart. If there's no beginning, then where would you start? Stars, stars. So we carve them into storytelling poems. Cause we're always searching for a certain goal. A pattern of physics, a role. Don't believe how you're told and open. Open up your fist, a misconception. You can fight like this and praise. With the power of prayer of God's on our side, we can take the stairs to the heavens. Flipping through my chapter 7, I live with the snakes in the great deceptional court.
in this country for men who steal from the mother on paper with pen. And we're tripping down a red dirt road and we're asking, is this the way we should go? Kissing soft top feet of my goddess. We walk the earth, baby, yeah, we got this. Focus and it's redirected. Sway, take my hand, I won't lead you astray. We will not go gently into the darkest of days. Grandma's here, and she says persevere. Take a walk in her moxies, a trail of tears. And our fears are the same as they ever were fears. And I'm the pain of a Holocaust gears. All in love and emotion, maybe, maybe being not another notion. Your arches, how they bend and contract on my conscience. And never slip through the grip of my thesis.
Cool. Welcome back to AA Live with Mark this evening. So in AA we often talk about sharing our experience, strength and hope in a meeting in particular. So that's often described as talking about what it was like, what happened and what it's like now. So what do you think, Mark, in terms of your experience? Do you want to share a little bit about what it was like and then, yeah, what sort of motivated you to make the jump? Cool.
Sweet. I was sharing a wee story with my daughter in the car, which I think relates to radio. Like, I was thinking, I've never been on the radio before, but I have been on the radio once. When New World opened up in my hometown, they had this big New World kind of party or something, or maybe it was the one-year party of New World, and they were giving out free things over there, and there was a fizzy drinking competition. And I won that fizzy drinking competition. And as soon as I finished and sculled that drink down, the radio asked me, what's your name? And I burped my name at the same time with the fizzy drink. I said to my daughter, do you reckon that's where the drinking kind of started, maybe? But, my story. Like, I got drunk for the first time when I was probably about 14, 15. I got super drunk on sake, homebrew sake. I was really, really sick. It was me and a couple of mates. My dad picked me up. He didn't even really tell me off. Knew I needed to go to sleep it off, but they made me go to school the next day. After that, I didn't really drink much through my kind of high school days. I was into sports and things like that, so I was more into that. During kind of the later teens, you get drunk with your friends and things like that. I was never really into drinking or a very good drinker, and then started smoking weed and things as you do at those kind of ages as well. All through my 20s, I had children really early, in my early 20s. I guess I was a normal drinker.
Was that kind of take it or leave it, or you just have a couple, or have a good night?
Often like special occasions and stuff. Like, I didn't really socialise too much in my 20s, you know, because of having kids and things like that early. Same in like my early 30s and things like that. And like a six pack could last like a week in the fridge kind of thing, you know. In my addiction and alcoholism, that would never happen. Yeah, in my 30s, I guess I started to become more social. There's a kind of, I guess, some separation and things like that. I had a breakup in a relationship. I guess there's various life events which kind of changed some of my behaviours.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always struggled a little bit with mental health and depression, anxiety and things like that. And I guess as a way, instead of, for a number of years in my 30s, I really worked on that. And then there was a bit of a slippage in my late 30s. And I'm working on those things, a bit of dissatisfaction with life, just a build-up of kind of resentments or, you know, thinking about the past too much and mistakes that I'd made. And I guess my drinking and drug use kind of increased during that time.
Did you do that by yourself, like solo, or were you changing, you know, with friends or new friends? You know, did that, the social
relationships? I think I was a bit of a random person. I'd drink a lot myself and then go and do things with others. Eventually was that I couldn't do things with others without drinking and things like that. Yeah, and then I guess you build, like, attachment. Like, everything starts to relate to alcohol or drugs or something like that. And then that becomes the way of life. And
What kind of time span, like in terms of a broad idea of years?
Well, I was just talking with that with my daughter in the car as well. And, like, she was like, oh, okay, it was definitely about 2 years ago that I knew, you know, that you're an alcoholic and things like that. And then I was saying, yeah, I probably was for about, I was trying to work out when it was. I mean, it's sneaky, you know. I could probably say for the last 5 or 6 years kind of thing. I used to get called a functional alcoholic, you know, because I could work, I could, you know, look after the kids, I could do everything, you know. And still party and stay out late.
But could you? This is the trick.
Yeah.
You can until you can't.
You
can.
You think you can.
Exactly. Until you start.
I might share that with you, actually, Mark. I share that similar pattern in a way. But then I realise more and more now that I thought I was high functioning.
Yes.
And, you know, compared to now, right, and you have sobriety starting to come into your life, is in your life, it's not coming in.
Yeah.
And then you realise, oh, I see, there's another level going on here
If you have to start hiding your breakfast choices of beer for breakfast or wine or whatever, like, that's, I guess, when I started realising something was a bit different between me and other people.
Mm.
Yeah, and I guess I tried to hold on to that mantle of a functional, even though I knew I was slipping, I knew I was falling apart and just, you know, gripping on.
Mm.
Yeah, so then there's, like, other things. When I'm not functional anymore, when things start slipping, like feeling sick all the time, you know, ill health. I was diagnosed with cancer in 2023, so 2 years ago, and that meant, like, I was working before that, and at least that gave me some sense of routine and everything like that. And then with the cancer diagnosis, I was quite sick because of being an addict, and with the cancer on top, you know, I was definitely unable to work and things like that. So I started getting treatment for cancer. That was here in Dunedin as well, radiation and things like that, and then eventually surgery. But during that time, I was mentally unwell, and addiction replaced. I know, it just kind of kept me going. I think by that point, I was, you know, you talk about people slowly killing themselves. I didn't really care if I was alive or dead. Like, with my cancer, like, there was kind of an option or a worst case scenario of they would have to amputate my leg. And I was like, I'd rather die than amputation, you know. And I can't, what's the point, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess that's the depth of, like, where hopelessness started to take place during that time. And when I kind of look at it, I kind of say, like, recovering from cancer, but I never really recovered from cancer because I was an addict at the same time. I was an addict, alcoholic. And so I never really gave myself a chance to get better.
Mm.
Yeah. And then when I finally kind of thought, all right, well, my cancer's clear, my leg's kind of a bit better, I should start doing something. And I tried to jump into study. I tried to do two studies at the same time. It's like, I guess, some kind of ego trip. Like, yeah, I'm better, I can do something. But I was struggling with that as well. And there's a number of times where I was, like, fainting and kind of, I guess, blacking out or just really lightheaded and flaky and got concussions and broken ribs and, you know,
wow.
Just kind of
yeah,
like...
Yeah, really sliding at this
yeah,
point, eh?
That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that's where other people, I guess, go like, how do you, you know, how do you do that? Oh, I wasn't wasted, you know. Like, how long can you kind of keep lying for and things? Yeah, and I guess towards the end it was when my family, like, came to see me and tried to make choices, and my behaviour was so out of character, you know. It's pretty much don't get in the way of my drugs and alcohol,
mm-hmm.
you know. And they hadn't seen that person before. So that was quite scary for them. Yeah, so I knew that just to make... Well, I didn't really know. I knew. I didn't know what to do. Something had to happen. It was, you know, they say jails, institutions, or death. Yeah.
That's a quote out of the big book, by the way.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. You know, I didn't want to go to jail for sure, and death sounded like probably one of the better options, but then I might as well give the institutions a go mm-hmm. first, and that's, I guess, was the bridge. Yeah. Hmm.
It's pretty powerful stuff, hey?
Yeah, I mean, I feel more powerful now than I did then, I'll tell you that anyway, yeah.
Hey, and you're active in both the AA, and so am I, for anyone listening, AA and NA fellowships. How have you found straddling the two worlds? Do you find it, did you get something out of each fellowship?
Yeah, in my hometown, like, more people went to AA, so, like, I was doing AA... in Oamaru, that's my hometown. And so that was my introduction to recovery. When I was at the bridge, Knox wasn't too far away, and so that's where I'd go to the NA meetings there. It was easy just to get there and things like that. And so I was attending the NA meetings there. And that was a real great introduction into the lifestyle and things like that. And, like... I guess the younger crowd there is probably what I might have picked up.
It is a bit younger, probably, yeah, in general.
Yeah, kind of thing. NA, I guess, has got, I think the idea of connection is maybe kind of important, I guess. So that's where I guess I've done a lot of my recovery, but I also do AA. I was quite made aware, probably on a couple of occasions actually, that AA, going to AA meetings needs to be more prevalent in my recovery. I'm not too sure if this is the case or not, but, like, I need to recover from both addictions, from alcohol and from drugs. And so I guess the decision I made a wee while ago was that I need to cover both those bases more often. So now going back to AA as well as NA and trying to balance it like that. In the end, I do kind of go to, like, maybe five meetings a week. And
yeah, that's good. It means. Yeah, I have another friend that, and they, yeah, they have a twin dual addiction. I can have multiple.
Poly addicts.
Yeah.
Which is so common, you know, but for him, he finds a different, he likes the AA as a base and then taps
yes.
and it's not secondary, maybe it is primary secondary, but yeah. It's quite a good
Someone explained
method.
To me, like, NA is kind of about, like, connection, and AA is kind of a bit more about discipline. I can kind of understand that point, but it's also probably in the manner in which people talk as well, and the different groups can be quite different.
I find there's quite a good, strong, traditional message at AA meetings that I really value, but I love both fellowships.
Yeah, there's a lot, often a lot of wisdom in the rooms in AA, I've found.
I found an old-timer who also goes to both fellowships said to me once, same cake, different icing.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Because they're both the same 12 steps, effectively.
Completely.
Except, you know, in ENA, for those who don't know, they just cross out the word alcohol and replace it with drugs, I believe.
Yeah.
Although, or addiction.
Addiction.
Yeah.
Addiction, yeah.
And alcohol is treated as a...
as a drug.
As a drug.
Correct.
And, you know.
Hey, we were going to play another song, but we've just had such
really?
A riveting conversation
we
that
have.
We're running out of time.
I actually became incredibly quiet then when I was listening to your story, Mark, because it's for those who are out there in the world listening to us, we're in a very small room and we're looking at each other in the eye, and when you know when you sort of reveal your innermost story, it's so powerful.
Yeah, cool. Thank
and,
you.
Yeah, it's so cool that you've come along tonight. It's
been great to be able to share.
Yeah,
thanks so much for your service. And just while we've got 30 seconds left, if anyone is looking for some help, has a problem, wants to reach out, you can call AA on 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757. Or jump onto the AA website, www.aa.org.nz. Mark was also talking about the bridge, so you can contact the Salvation Army. They have a group that's quite a good first group to go to. It's a Friday morning meeting at 10 a.m. It was my first ever recovery group. No appointment needed.
And look at you now.
And look at me now. Hey? Take a look at me now.
He's on the radio, Mike.
So, yeah. Hey, thanks. Thanks, guys. Awesome.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mike and Sue.
Yeah, great evening. Good night, everyone.
Peace and love.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.